Welcome back to another episode. I'm Ashley.
And I'm Curtis.
And this is Partners in Crime. All right, so sorry, this is your last week's episode. Didn't get recorded until today. So this week you're going to have an episode that starts today, and then you're going to have your regularly scheduled episode on Friday.
Remember all the talks we've had about how punctual you should be? Can't be on time to anything.
This is a partnership, so you're equally to blame.
Of what?
You're taking, it's a partnership, partners in crime, right?
Yeah, and the crime is that you were late on recording.
Yeah, that's true.
You should be charged for it.
I've had a few people text me and like, hey, where's the episode? It's here. You're listening to it now, so here you go. It's, I don't know. You're going to have to this week, so.
Hopefully she learns a lesson on every Friday.
On every Friday, yeah. You'll have this one and the one on Friday. So, have you ever hitchhiked?
Yes.
No, you haven't.
Yes, I have.
Okay, now I need the story.
Which time?
Oh my gosh. You've hitchhiked more than once?
Yeah.
All right, let's hear it.
I mean, I don't know. I guess the first time I ever hitchhiked, I was probably like 12, maybe.
Okay. Oh, and, my gosh.
Well, I wasn't alone this time. My mom and my stepdad were with me. We had broke down on the side of the highway, and we were walking to the gas station, and some lady like pulled over and picked us up. And she said normally she wouldn't stop, but because they had a kid, that is the reason that they stopped.
That's fun. That's insane that you say that, because when I tell you about this case, you're going to be like, oh my gosh.
Oh, trust me, when it happened, because I'm just a different type of person, I was already creeped out because, you know, she shut the door or whatever, and the door's automatically locked. And I was like, like, why are the doors locking?
I've hitchhiked one time. And mom, if you're listening, just fast forward like a minute and a half, 2 minutes, because my best friend, Kelsey, from high school, like we've been friends since elementary school, but in high school, we snuck out the night before from her dad's house, and the whole nine yards, we stuffed the blankets with pillows and stuff so it looked like we were sleeping. We even had like fake hair on the pillow. I'm not kidding, the whole nine yards. So
I hope Bella listens to this someday and she's like, really? Really, mom?
So we snuck out and we walked all the way over to, so it's like a probably like a 5 mile walk towards where I actually lived, so okay, my neighborhood. So I don't know why we didn't just stay at my house in the first place, but we did not. Much harder to sneak out of my mom's house.
So she would have noticed the pillows.
Well, maybe, probably. Yeah, my mom would definitely notice. So anyways,
oh my gosh.
So we sneak out, and on our way, so then like we end up staying the night in a park because we were idiot teenagers. We stayed the night in a park. And we walked back the next day, and we had to get back to the house before her dad got home. And, like, on the walk back home, my stepdad at the time had drove past us on his way home, or way back to work from lunch. And he, like, tried to find us, but we, like, dived into this cornfield, and he couldn't find us. So we run, like, we're running. Like, it's a 5 mile, like, hike, okay? That's, like 5 miles as the crow flies. So, like, not even all the streets that we had to go down. So we were cutting corners, literally cut through a cornfield, through, like, this whole creek thing. Anyways, it's hot. It's, like, 100 degrees, and we're, like, sweating through our clothes. It was freezing the night before, and I'm telling you, idiot teenager stuff, okay? Uh-huh. So my mom is calling her dad, like, my husband just seen these two girls walking, like, where are they? Are you home? Please go find them. And she had the wrong number.
No way.
So, like, my friend's dad had just went through a divorce, and so he had to change his phone, like, the house phone number, because, like, the ex-wife kept calling.
Right.
So he changed, my mom did not have the new number. So, we're going to, like, barely make it back, and we're walking down this super long road, which I'm not going to say where because, you know, we still live in the same area. So.
Right.
So we're walking down the super long road, and we get, like, under this overpass, and this car stops, and it's two old ladies sitting in this, I don't even know what kind of a car it was. Okay, we accepted the ride. We were not hitchhiking, but we accepted the ride.
What?
There were mannequins in the back seat. You know how bad that could have ended? Anyway, she just.
I'm so confused how you weren't hitchhiking because you got in the car with a stranger.
Hiking, she stopped and asked if we needed a ride because we were like.
But you agreed, which now makes you a hitchhiker.
We weren't actively hitchhiking. Like, we didn't have our thumb out. We didn't have, like, our thumb out on the side of the road. Like, they just.
So, since you didn't thumb them down, it doesn't count?
And to me, it didn't. But, anyways, we hitchhiked with the cop ones. Back to her dad's house. We got there, and her dad showed up 15 minutes later. So, wow. Shout out to that old lady, if you're listening. She probably isn't, but maybe she
is. Oh, my gosh, you're awful. What? Is she going to be our next podcast or what?
No. No. Maybe. She had mannequins in her backseat.
She was, like, on her way to a worker shift at JCPenney, and you were like, oh, these mannequins are an awful idea.
Anyways.
Where she gets home and she's lonely and just has, like, mannequins all over the house. Like, one's making dinner, one's sitting on the couch.
That's what I'm saying.
Oh, like, hey, Georgetta.
I don't want to replace one of her mannequins. I mean, who knows?
Right. Like, maybe those are her kids, like, vicariously living in the backseat.
So, anyways, sorry for the long story time, but it's
shout out relevant. To Margaret.
I don't know if that was her name.
I know, I just figured it was an older name because you obviously made it sound like she's definitely not alive still. So.
Oh, I didn't even think about it. Maybe she is. I mean, it was only 15 years ago. She might still be alive.
All right, well, we hope you enjoyed the podcast. Clearly, we weren't talking about any true crime today. Yeah, only mannequins.
So those two hitchhiking stories of ours turned out a lot differently than this one. So Colleen Stan was 20 years old on May 19th, 1977. She was 20 years old. And she was trying to find a way to get out of Eugene, Oregon, right?
Yes, okay. That was good.
To get herself to a friend's birthday party in California. Her car wouldn't start, so she decided to hitchhike, which, yikes. But, I mean, sometimes it works out, clearly.
Have you ever been to Oregon?
No.
No way am I hitchhiking in Oregon. Why? I'm sorry if you live in Oregon. I'm sorry. There's no way.
Why?
Oh, my gosh. That's creepy. I'm already creeped out.
Okay.
Just the whole area. It's so open and, like, vast. I just, no.
1977, though.
Right. Even worse is what I'm saying. Because now it's more civilized.
So I would say that probably most times that you hitchhike, nothing happens. Like, you just get from point A to point B pretty uneventfully, right?
Sure.
Okay, so that was the case for Colleen. Sounds scary, but these were, like, typical days of hitchhiking. It was actually pretty common. She was trying to get to California to surprise her friend, so she didn't tell anybody. Oh my gosh, I'm so embarrassed.
I can't believe that you didn't turn your volume off.
Time, it was my phone. I'm so sorry.
She gives me a hard time all the time. That's why I had to say something.
I always give him a hard time about having his sound on when we're recording. So I'm sorry about that. So she was going to California to surprise her friend for her birthday, but she didn't tell anybody that she was going there. It was a surprise.
What a surprise.
First of all, surprises are for people that, you know, I don't know if it's a safe environment, surprise somebody. This is not hitchhiking and surprises. I mean, I guess they go hand in hand. So don't do it. Either one. So tell people where you're going because, yeah. So she manages to hitchhike with multiple truckers, getting all the way to Red Bluff, California, which is about 100 miles away from her final destination. But she was very picky and choosy about who she accepted rides from. So she would gauge.
Well, that's smart.
Yeah.
It sounds like she's, you know, trying to be precautious, yeah, at least.
She would gauge out who she would accept a ride from and who she wouldn't. She actually turned down two different rides this day. One of them was a car full of young guys, which, smart on her.
Right, because you never know.
That probably would have ended good. I mean, who knows? When a couple in a blue car pulled up to offer her a ride, she thought it might have been okay because they were a married couple and the wife was holding an infant baby in her lap. Like, these are the days before car seats, so.
Right.
That sounds safe, right? Just like the hitchhiker that picked you guys, or you guys were picked up because you were there as a kid.
That's so crazy to me to think about, like, and I mean, I know it happened. I definitely thought they had car seats in 77. But the fact that people just drove around the front seat, like just holding a baby is like wild to me.
Yeah, that's, I mean, it was a different time, but that's the thing too, is that the fact that she picked you guys up because you were the kid, do you know how easy it would be for like a kidnapper to get somebody to comply because their child was there?
Right.
That just seemed, anyways, it's, don't do that. Just don't do it, okay? I don't want to talk about you guys, so. So she thought there was probably no harm. It looks okay and safe enough. So she gets in the car and they begin to drive. The man's name was Cameron Hooker. You haven't heard of him, right?
No.
And you haven't heard of Colleen Stan?
No.
Okay. So I just want to make sure he doesn't.
If this is your first episode, I don't really care for true crime and I know nothing about any of these cases. These are my reactions.
Yeah, that's true. So he was 23 at the time and his wife, who was 19 at the time, her name was Janice Hooker. And things seemed normal for about the first 20 minutes of the ride. They stopped at a gas station and...
I'm really sorry.
What?
Did you say that his name was Booker and her name is Hooker?
No. Their last name is Hooker. His name is Cameron and her name is Janice.
Okay, I'm following. Sorry, I just thought Hooker, like... was making sure that was her last name and not selective something hearing, to the everyone. Story.
Selective hearing.
Wow.
Things seemed normal. Like I said, for about the first 20 minutes, they stop at a gas station and Colleen gets out. And I watched an interview. It's one of the sources that I'm going to cite in the show notes, that she had like this feeling while she was standing in the bathroom that she should just jump out the window and get out of there. But she didn't. She goes back to the car. And when she gets in the back seat, there is a wooden box sitting on the seat that was not there before. Just like, this isn't a visual podcast, but anyways, just like a wooden box just sitting on the seat. And she was like, okay, weird. But they didn't say anything about it, so she didn't ask. Because they're giving her a ride. She's not about to come off as rude.
Right.
Which, seriously, just sometimes it's better to be rude. Because...
listen to your gut.
Yeah, for sure. So... I gotta find my place. I'm sorry. So they started driving again and he kept looking at her from the rearview mirror. Like, you know, when you're driving and you
look that's kinda in the rearview mirror
at the back seat. And I guess it was making her super uncomfortable, but she was like, well.
Here's the other time she could have climbed out the window.
It's a free ride. She was close to where she was supposed to be going. So she was like, it's probably fine. So he asked her, like, hey, we're going to stop and look at these sites because it's like a site, a scenic route or whatever. So she was like, okay, cool. I guess.
Right.
You're giving me a ride. So it's your car. You decide. And so they stop. Janice and the baby get out of the car and walk down by the water where they stopped at. And Cameron stays there with Colleen. And he then holds her at knife point. He handcuffs her, he blindfolds her, he gags her, and he's forcing her to put this homemade wooden box on her head that's insulated on the inside with carpet. And there's like a hole.
Oh, so it's big enough to cover her entire head?
Yeah, so think about it.
I was imagining this is like big enough to like hold a book or something.
No, it has like hinges, so like it opens up. And he closes it around her neck.
Oh.
If that makes sense. So it's complete darkness.
Do we have a picture of this that we can put on the Instagram?
I didn't look at the pictures because I was scared to find some of them. So if I find one, I'll post one. I just haven't looked.
I was just thinking this would be a good visual for our listeners to see.
I'm sure there probably is. So she's completely helpless at this point, and she's in the back seat with this 20-pound wooden box on her head.
She's still being gagged at the same
time? Yeah, she's blindfolded and she's gagged at this point with a wooden box insulated with carpet on her head that's 20 pounds.
Wow.
So.
This is weird.
Yeah. So she can hear the wife and the baby get back in the car and then they start driving. So. She's pretty much helpless at this point. There's nothing that she can do. So she just kind of complies. Like, what else is she going to do?
Right.
Like, what's the point? She's realizing,
like, maybe if I don't fight it, they'll just let me go.
Right. So once they stop driving, they go inside of the hooker's home, and Colleen's taken, still blindfolded, but with the box off, into the basement. After a week of her friends not seeing her, they contacted her parents, and her parents said they haven't seen her either, so they end up reporting her missing in multiple different cities. So nobody's heard from her. I'm assuming she told at least one person that she was going, and that she just should have been there by now.
Yeah, it just seems weird.
Yeah, so just to rewind, Cameron and Janice met in their mid-teens. Janice had no relationship experience, no close family. She had low self-esteem. And when Cameron took interest in her, she kind of clung to that. When they first got together, she wasn't allowed to date. But he went in and talked to her parents and convinced them to let her date him. She just wasn't close with her family, I guess, because they were super strict. You know what I mean? Can you kind of picture that whole scene? On one of their first dates, on one of their first dates, he tied her up and hung her by her wrist from a tree and just, like, whipped her with a whip.
Wow.
And then they proceeded to have consensual sex after that. And so in her mind...
So it kind of, like, turned her on.
No.
Oh.
No, it terrified her, but she didn't think... She thought that that was normal, is what she thought. Because she had no prior relationship experience. She didn't have a great family to, like, model from. And so to her, she was like, well, he loves me, so this must be normal. It kind of sucks, but at least he loves me, right?
Right.
So he was conditioning her towards a certain type of lifestyle, basically.
Okay.
Don't take too long feeling bad for her, though. So she's not great.
She was conditioned that way, though.
She was conditioned that way, but, I mean, we all have choices. So, and it's controversial how people feel about her. So, I think she's 100%.
Well, maybe I'll choose my mind.
So, yeah, don't take my word for it. She didn't seem bothered by the abuse. She didn't seem bothered by the names he would call her or what he would require that she perform during their intimate times. Even though at one point during one of their sessions, he almost drowned her. Like, she almost drowned and died.
Wow.
But, I mean, obviously she didn't. So naturally, with a relationship that explosive, obviously, on January 18th, 1975, they decided to get married.
Huh.
Seems legit, right? Great foundation for marriage. So she must have gotten tired of this lifestyle because she gave in to her husband's demand of wanting a sex slave. And he wanted to abduct a girl for this reason. So
that's
she said,
so funny. Why? Because I was literally thinking this whole time as you were talking about, like, why people hitchhike. But then I was wondering if these two were driving the car looking for a hitchhiker.
They were.
On purpose, to, like, find her. Like, this was the goal for the day, was to go find somebody and abduct them.
Yeah, it's almost like, you know, this case. So, see, it's kind of like you're kind of picking up on true crime, because...
Blech.
Okay, so... So she agreed to letting him have a sex slave. Sorry if you can hear the train in the background.
We are not sponsored by Amtrak, and we hope they are going to pay us some royalties.
Sponsor us someday, because you're actually featured in our episode every single
week.
This was
brought to you by Thomas the Train.
Right. Choo-choo. So, sorry, I have to find my place again. So she agreed to letting him have a sex slave if he would abide by the two conditions that she had. So, you can have a sex slave, but these are my conditions. She said, one, you can only whip and hit the girl that you abduct so that she could safely carry out a pregnancy and mother their children. She wanted to reproduce with this man. I just want to point that out. And two,
like, she wants the sex slave to have the baby, though?
No, no, no. She wants to have a baby, so she wants him to stop basically beating her.
Oh.
So she's like, take it out on somebody else, and then you can come back, and like, I'll be here for you. Because the second condition was that he would never have penetrating intercourse with anyone besides her.
Well, then how's she a sex slave?
Oh, we'll get into it. So oddly enough, Cameron agreed to these conditions that his wife gave. According to Janice, on January 31st, 1976, Cameron and Janice effectively kidnapped a 19-year-old hitchhiker. Her name was Marie Elizabeth. I'm not going to say this last name right. It's like Spanhakey.
Okay.
She went by Marla's, short for her name, Marie Elizabeth. And Chico, California. Is that right? Yep. Okay. He undressed her. He hung her in his basement by her wrist. He tortured her for one day. He shot her in the belly with a pellet gun, and then he strangled her. This is all according to Janice. She was later buried by the two of them in a shallow grave in Laysan Volcanic National Park, which I'm not sure where that's at. I'm assuming it's in California. The body was never recovered. She was never found. Her boyfriend, Marla's boyfriend, actually was accused for her disappearance, but Cameron was never charged with this murder because they do not have enough evidence. I just want to point that out. This is all alleged based on what Janice said that he did. He's never been charged for it because they don't have enough evidence. They don't have a body.
Okay.
So this was a year prior to him kidnapping Colleen. He kidnapped her and killed her the same day.
Wow.
That's not very effective use of a sex slave, if you ask me. If you're going to end up killing them.
Well, maybe.
They're not going to last as your slave if they are dead.
Maybe he didn't kill her on purpose.
Well, he strangled her.
Right, but he already like tried to drown his wife and almost killed her.
Maybe he didn't.
So maybe it was like an accident. Like maybe he gets off on being right at the last inch of your life. You know what I mean, type of person.
Yeah, yeah, probably. Yeah.
Here I go. So, true crime again.
There you go, jumping ahead. So already we're off to a not very good start for Colleen. Cameron is violent. He's clearly disturbed. He already allegedly killed someone just a year prior to this kidnapping, and things are not going great for Colleen. He cuts her clothes off and hangs her up in the basement. Like, this is back to Colleen when they get back to the house. He hangs her up in the basement by her wrists. Excuse me. He whipped her while Janice just watched. After this, while still in front of Colleen, the hookers start having sex. So Colleen was just whipped. Janice watched the whole thing. And they were like, well, sounds like a good time for us to get it on.
Which, right. It's a turn on. Yeah. It's like a fetish now.
But you see how Janice is kind of involved?
Well, she's not stopping it, but that's like, she wants to make her husband happy, but she obviously doesn't want it to happen to her.
Okay.
So now she's finding that like somebody can take it like a, I don't know, like a substitute for her.
A lot of people see it like that. Oh. After this.
I'm not saying it's right though.
Yeah. When they're finished, Cameron starts feeling up Colleen. She blacks out. And when she wakes back up, the head box, the wooden box is back on her, head. And she is in a box, not much bigger than the size of a coffin. Locked
in. Oh, that's terrifying.
Yeah, when she wakes
up. I'm claustrophobic, so for the audience that may not know.
Ugh. So Cameron begins torturing her daily in front of his wife. The wife also participated in torturing. She would bite her, smack her, hit her, whatever.
Okay, so this is different because now she's involved.
Yeah, now she's involved. But this is all under the instruction of Cameron, which is why people are like, well, is she really involved? Like, she was forced to do it.
Well, she's probably afraid she's going to die. I mean, he's been beating her basically her whole life.
Yeah, and they have a baby now at this point. So I keep losing my place. So his wife participated in the torture, but primarily to take the hits off of herself is what is
right.
What is what I found in almost every source. So the torture that Cameron inflicted on Colleen included whipping, electric shock, burning. He would starve her. He would put her on a homemade rack, which we'll get into later. And in the first month, she lost 22 pounds. From May to August, from when she was abducted until August later that year, she wasn't allowed to clean herself, but in August, he decided to let her have her first bath. By November 1977, she was allowed outside the box, and she was allowed to do household chores, but she had to do them naked. So, yeah, it's kind of weird. Like, he would get these ideas from these bondage books that he had.
Okay, this makes sense.
And he was like, yeah, it's a great idea. I'm going to incorporate that. I mean, he had like literally a live-in slave. So while all this terrible and disturbing, while all of this is terrible and disturbing for Colleen, January 1978, Cameron decides to tell Colleen that he's part of a huge organization called The Company. He tells Colleen that there's an elite force that will back him up should she ever try to leave, and so he and Janice write up a contract and give it to Colleen for her to sign her life, her soul, and anything else that she might possess in the future over to Cameron. So Cameron's like, okay, I actually am a part of this elite sex slave trade, and you need to sign this contract, because if you don't, like, we're going to have to just kill you anyways. So
right.
Sign this and things will get better for you, but not really, because you're going to be my property.
Right.
So at this point, it's been almost a year, and he's tortured her every day for almost a year. So why would she not believe him? Like, she has no reason to think that there's no company. Like, she has no reason to think that there might not be a company. She's probably...
I mean, nobody's found her for a whole year.
Right. That's just the thing. So, now he owns her like a piece of property, according to this binding contract. And if she should ever break the contract, the company would find her or her loved ones, hurt them or worse. Basically, this company kept enslaved people in line. And this was 100% the most BS ever. But Colleen, who had been tortured for months, felt that at this point, anything could be possible. So feeling as though she had no choice and completely terrified to object anyways, Colleen signs it. Things were much different after this point for a while. She was there now and even more fear than when she had got there, and the fear created her to be more submissive, which is exactly what Cameron wanted. He fixed a collar around her neck, and he changed her name to Kay. So she wasn't allowed to go by Colleen anymore. She had to go by Kay.
I wonder if her name was spelled with a K.
Yeah, it was just a K.
Oh, I'm saying like Colleen was spelled with a K.
It wasn't.
That's interesting.
So Janice, she no longer had to clean the house, and she was no longer being sexually abused by her husband. So Janice, in a way, is a victim of this whole thing, but she was also part of the abuse.
Right.
February 1978, Janice gives Cameron permission to start having penetrative intercourse with Colleen. And this opens a door that cannot be closed.
This is about to get crazy.
So he starts raping, like full-on raping her. And the first time it happens, I guess, it made Janice so sick that during getting raped, Colleen could hear her throwing up in the bathroom because she was so sickened by the fact that he was having sex with another woman.
Well, I mean, it just seems so weird. That she helped
kidnap. So, I mean, I don't even know what to say to that.
Right.
I guess
really poor gross. Janice.
I mean, what? Like, did she expect sympathy? So this changed the dynamic of the entire situation. Like I said, it was the door that could never be shut, because after it started, there was no way he was going to stop. He told his wife that he was not going to do it all the time. He was lying. He was definitely lying. So over the course of the next few months, Cameron assaulted Colleen as much and as often as he felt like. Soon after this, Cameron and Janice buy a new home, which is a trailer, and they don't have a basement in this house because it's a trailer. So Colleen goes with them because where else is she going to go? Right. She's their slave. And he didn't have a basement, so he got creative. This part is so messed up. He built a wooden box under the frame of his waterbed. And he told Colleen to crawl into it.
And she just stayed there?
She spent basically almost every day, 23 hours a day, in the box.
I don't know what's worse. What she had going before that.
Well, right. And that's just the thing, is there was no predictability to him at all.
Does she end up... Okay, I guess I can't jump ahead.
So she spends the rest of that year primarily in the box under the bed, like 23 hours a day. She was let out to be raped, hit, whipped, or to perform chores. That was it. And they would feed her, but it was just not often or a lot. And it was super hot. And sometimes they would put her in there with the box on her head.
Wow.
Yeah. So, her family thought at this point that she had ran away or possibly joined a cult because they just hadn't heard from her. They didn't know if she was even okay or alive or what. They just didn't even know. They were at a loss. I mean, they were devastated, but there was nothing they could do. There was no trace. So Cameron makes Colleen build him a torture shed in the backyard where he's able to hang her up on a rack that allows him to stretch her body out. Like a medieval torture device.
I feel like I could use this for my back sometimes.
Yeah, but I would not.
Oh, I get it. I just think about, man, I wish I could kind of try that.
Anyways.
Sorry.
Janice was getting to the point of being jealous of Colleen. Okay, so this is the wife. Yep. She's jealous of the girl, the literal 20-year-old girl that she abducted. So.
Well, yeah, because her husband's now hooking up with him more than her.
That's right. So she was jealous of her, even though Colleen was the only reason that Cameron stopped abusing her. So, yeah. By December of 1980, she'd been missing for 2.5 years at this point. So he decided that she's so brainwashed by his abuse that he's going to give her a Christmas gift and he's going to let her call her family on the phone.
What?
Yeah. So she was instructed that she is to be as vague as possible. And her father was super grateful to have gotten to talk to her. But Cameron cut the conversation off very quick. He was like, okay, that's enough. Stop talking to them. So she hung up the phone because she's scared of the company.
Right.
So by 1981, nearing the 3-year mark of her kidnapping, Colleen is allowed more privileges, like working in the garden, cleaning the house more frequently, and not just at night. Because they have her so terrified of the company to disobey or try to run away.
What's up with the kid this whole time?
I don't know. I didn't find anything on it, but I'm sure they've seen her.
They had to have, especially now that she's out.
I think that they knew her as Kay.
That's so weird.
Yeah. So this also happened in 1981. Cameron told Colleen that the company had been watching for years at this point, and they decided to allow Colleen to visit her family. So she just had to prove her loyalty first, and she had to do a test. You want to know what the test was?
That she'll come back?
No. The test was that he handed her a shotgun, told her to put it in her mouth, and pulled the trigger. That was the test of loyalty.
Of what?
Yeah.
Listen, if I'm Colleen, I'm pulling that trigger.
She pulled the trigger, and the gun wasn't loaded.
I was going to say, even if it was loaded, what's the worst that's going to happen? What's the
worst that's going to happen? Right. Yeah, right. Exactly. So he was like, okay, I trust you. I'm going to allow you to see your family because I am giving you that gift. I'm okay. A great guy. So anyways, so he takes her to her family's house and along the way, he prepped her what she was allowed to say, what she wasn't allowed to say. He said, you know, your dad's house is under strict surveillance. Like, the whole house has already been bugged. Like, they're going to be able to hear you while you're inside. Her family was worried to ask too many questions, but that was great for Colleen because there just really wasn't a lot she was allowed to say anyways. So when he went, he called her the next morning. She was there for 24 hours. And the morning that he called, he was like, I'm going to be there in 10 minutes and you need to be ready to leave. And she was like, all right. So he gets there and they were like, well, wait. Like, we want to know more about you. Like, cause you're her fiance is what she told them. And so he came inside and her dad's wife, her stepmom took a picture of them together. And she was like, can we just get your address so like we can send you mail and stuff? And he was like, well, you know, we're moving. So we'll send you the new address when we move. They did not. They did right. not.
But now she has his picture.
Well, right. I didn't even think about that. But
oh, that I thought that was like a pertinent part of information.
Listen, I don't know. I know I don't know a lot about like anything that happened before the 90s, but I don't think that.
Oh boy, here we go.
I don't think that a picture was going to go that far then.
Why?
What are they going to do? Post it in the local newspaper? Did they even
or on a milk
internet?
Carton for missing people?
Okay.
I mean, anywhere. Yeah, they have newspapers then. For sure.
Yeah.
And the internet. Well, the internet wasn't around until the 90s, but then, I mean, they had computers, but they wouldn't be able to talk with each other. So, I mean, yeah, I guess newspapers, mail.
Newspapers, the mail, but it would have to be seen by people. He wouldn't even tell them where they lived, like what city. So, after she got back from this trip.
TV.
They have TV?
Yes. Yes,
oh,
they did.
See, there you go.
TV came around in the 40s. I was like, why am I not thinking of how they mass communicated? Oh, television.
Because you're married to me. Yeah. It's in our water. Who knows? So after they got back to their house after this trip, all of the freedoms that she had gained, like working in the garden, coming out of the box during the day to do chores and stuff. Dude, it's so bad. She lost all those freedoms.
I don't know why you just said came out of the box, and I was like, wait, what?
The box under the bed.
Because she was literally in a box.
Yeah, yeah, literally in the box under the bed. So she basically got stuck back in the box for the majority of the day, 23 hours a day.
That's disgusting. Like, right after she saw her parents?
Yeah, because he didn't want her to think that, oh, I'm so generous, you can trust me, and start misbehaving, like quote-unquote
okay.
Misbehaving. So he didn't want her to be able to predict his next move. So for the next 3 years, he just kept her in the box, taking her out just to torture her and do whatever he said to do. But after 3 years of this, she convinced Cameron to let her get a part-time job. And he reluctantly agrees, and she works part-time under the name of Kay Powers at a hotel. Like cleaning, but she didn't really care what she was doing because she was
just
want
to get
house.
Away from it. Yeah.
Yeah. So she's allowed to start going to church with Janice at this time too, which whatever. So during this time, rather than have her sleep in the box under the bed, she was chained to the toilet in the bathroom on the floor, like most nights. Which is a significant upgrade from the box under their waterbed.
Well, yeah. You'd have to say so.
So, Cameron would rotate having sex with his wife with raping Colleen. There was no rhyme or reason. It was just whatever he felt like that night. So.
I wondered if he had sex with her, like with Janice, while Kay was inside the box.
Yeah, he did.
Ew, that's awful.
He absolutely did. He was a disgusting person. Well, he's still alive. So
that's crazy.
So, yeah, it was always just whatever he wanted. Then he decides that he's going to build a dungeon because he wants more sex slaves. Because two women in his life just were not enough to satisfy his needs.
Looking for the new model, I guess.
Apparently. And this pushes Janice over the edge. Like, she's already jealous of Colleen. Right. So she starts looking at Colleen more of a person than her husband's sex slave. Like, maybe you could have done that, oh, I don't know, 7 years ago, Janice? Come on. She's been a person this
whole time. Well, I think it's because she doesn't have anybody to be close with. So now she has, like, somebody that's been there and knows what's going on in her life.
Yeah. Well, they begin talking, and she breaks down and tells her pastor. Janice breaks down and tells the pastor of her church everything, and he tells her to get Colleen out of there. Because that's not cool to let your husband have a sex slave that lives under your waterbed.
Right.
Turns out. So she goes to Colleen's workplace at the hotel and tells her that everything's a lie, the company's not real, she just couldn't take it anymore, and that she needs to go and get out. And Colleen was shocked and surprised, like, are you serious? Like, she thought she was lying. She was like, are you serious? And she's like, yeah, I'm serious. Like, don't come back. Seriously, it was all a lie. Like, my husband's a sick, you know,
right,
sadistic, whatever. So, she's relieved, obviously, and she calls her dad, and she's like, I'm coming home, because screw this place. So she's about to get on a bus to go back home, and before leaving, Colleen calls Cameron on her own terms and tells him, quote, I'm leaving, and there's nothing that you can do to stop me. And I guess he just starts crying.
What?
And it's not because he's sad that she's leaving. He's like, oh no, like, my life's about to be over. So nothing, like, so Janice ends up going back to Cameron, and I don't know if he was mad, because she just got rid of her sex slave, so maybe he was mad, but she ends up going back to him, so.
Colleen does?
No, Janice does.
I was like, what?
So she hangs up, she leaves, and she's no longer a slave, but she's not really free from the monstrous couple either. She was so happy to be free and back with her family, but there was a lot of damage done to Colleen. So she's free at this point, like, physically.
Okay.
And mentally, she's still...
probably sick. PTSD struggle, oh, and everything, yeah, else.
So Janice finally leaves Cameron, and she takes everything to the police. Janice does.
Wow.
And so the Red Bluff police in California, because that's where they lived, was Red Bluff. They go to contact Colleen, and they spent 2 days interviewing her and confirming everything that Janice told them was true. So, and this was over a 7-year period, mind you, that he had kept her a slave. So on August 22nd, 1984, Cameron Hooker is arrested for the sex crimes, kidnapping, and false imprisonment. But he doesn't question it at all. He was just like, okay, that's fine. Arrest me. I have nothing to say. He had no reaction, nothing. But after he got arrested, Janice took him back. And he was like, immediately destroy all evidence that she was ever at her house. So she's like, okay, cool, I will.
Wow.
Just because this is who she is in this. And that's what I'm saying. Like, she knew it was wrong. She made the choice to go back to him while he was in jail, even listen to what he was saying then.
Yeah, so but she has like a whole kid with him. I mean, I kind of get it. I think I might be on the other side, because
I'm sorry, but if you did this, I would be like, nope, no. I'm throwing you under the bus. Goodbye. Enjoy jail.
No, I agree with you. That's not what I'm saying. Right. So like, from her perspective, it's obviously not okay. But from a young age, she was taught that, you know, being beat by your husband or boyfriend and like all this is normal. And then she finally sees like a scapegoat. Like, I don't even know this person. It's just going to be some random person that we randomly find, and they're going to have to deal with all the pain and torture, and I'm just going to be okay.
Yeah.
Maybe he won't kill me, because he's probably trying to kill her the whole time. And now she like feels bad because she realizes Kay is a whole person.
Her name's Colleen. Okay. Kay was the name that.
Well, I know.
Okay.
But that's what I'm saying, because in the end she was calling her Kay.
I just want to obviously clarify that, because she does not go by Kay. Like,
right.
She goes
her
by
name's
Colleen,
Colleen, but yeah, that's what he gave her.
So she ends up taking him back, and Basically, there's no evidence that she was ever there, but she, like you just said, she was also a victim of Cameron. That doesn't take away her personal responsibility in the crimes committed against Colleen. There were even times that Colleen was forced into sexual acts performed on Janice. So, in my opinion, she raped Colleen too. So,
well, yeah, for sure. I'm not saying she shouldn't be in trouble.
Yeah, she's not innocent.
I'm just saying I understand why she did what she did.
Prosecutors were determined to get this guy, so during the trial, they were able to reconstruct the box that Colleen was forced to live in for over 7 years, and it sat in the middle of the courtroom every single day of the trial while jurors looked at it.
Wow.
Yeah, speaks volumes. So eventually, Janice Hooker agrees to testify against her husband, Cameron, but only in exchange for immunity for her role in the crimes, which, whatever.
Do they grant her it?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So Dr. Chris Hatcher was an expert psychologist on the case. Like, he testified as an expert. And he explains the condition that Colleen is in because of the conditioning that Cameron put her through, keeping her in captivity, so that they could understand the gravity of Colleen's position. Cameron tells the jury... Like, so Cameron goes and he takes a stand on his own defense. Oh my gosh, he's such an idiot. This is what he says to the jury. He was like, yup, I kidnapped her because I wanted a sex slave. But you know what? I decided it was wrong and I let her free, but she wouldn't leave because she fell in love with me.
Wow.
That's what he told the jury. And the jury was like, cool, you're guilty.
Right, like, thanks for being honest that you did do it.
Thank you for admitting that. So they find him guilty of everything. October 31st, 1985, he was found guilty of 10 felony counts and sentenced to 95 years in prison. Originally, he was sentenced to 104, but it got reduced because of, like, some laws or whatever, to 95 years and a $50,000 fine. And Janice was not charged in return for her testimony, and she continues to live in California, but under a different name. In 2015, he was denied parole. Cameron Hooker is scheduled for release sometime this year, 2022. What? He's eligible for parole again. Colleen hopes that the parole board will find him not qualifying for parole, obviously, because he's dangerous. He actually appeared in court on October 6, 2021, so just a couple months ago.
Okay.
And prosecutors are taking the case to civil court, asking that he would be designated as a sexually violent predator that would keep him confined to a mental health facility at the very least. So, I don't know. His trial's expected to start sometime this year, 2022. Colleen Stan suffered chronic back and shoulder pain as a result of her confinement. When she returned home, she received extensive therapy and eventually married, and they had a daughter of their own. She joined an organization committed to helping abused women and earned a degree in accounting. Colleen Stan and Janice Hooker both changed their names and continued to reside in California. However, they do not communicate with each other. In regards to her resilience during those excruciating years in captivity, Stan tells reporters, quote, I learned I could go anywhere in my mind, end quote. In similar vein to Janice's compartmentalization, Stan said, quote, you just remove yourself from the real situation, go on, and you go somewhere else, end quote. Her story inspired movies, and even an episode of Criminal Minds is based on her story of being held captive in the company. And that is the story of the kidnapping but surviving tale of Colleen Stan.
That's crazy. I thought that she was going to be dead.
Yeah, me too, considering they killed the first person, allegedly. Well, I guess now is a good time to transition over to
Curtis. The favorite part of everybody's reason why you're here.
Curtis's Conspiracy Corner, so... All right, let's hear what your conspiracy is this week.
Okay, so this is just wild. Okay.
Aren't they all?
No. This one, This has been like aligning with so many things that I've looked into. So when you hear Roswell, New Mexico, what do you think of?
Area 51.
Area 51, right?
Yep.
Okay, so, like, do you know why Area 51 is special?
Because of aliens.
But do you know, like, what's happened with aliens there?
No.
Yeah, neither does, like, anybody else, right?
Yeah, well, so, I mean, I think it's just, like, a big hush-hush, whatever, whatever, but nobody really knows. People just assume they know.
Okay, so a lot of people saw, like, this saucer-like image falling from the sky
mm-hmm.
in 1947, which happened just on this ranch outside of Roswell, right?
It's always on a ranch, too, right?
Yeah, just out in the middle of nowhere.
Ranches are sus, and I will never live on one, so.
So this is one thing that I've always found funny is, like, the reason why it's called a conspiracy theory is because the FBI came out and basically said that they're, like, fake stories that people make up. And a lot of things over the years have come out as conspiracy theories, right?
Yeah.
Like, for instance, UFOs. The government said for how many decades that UFOs are conspiracy theories? Not anymore. Right, because then they come out, like, 2 years ago and then now just say that, oh, they've actually been real this whole time and we have documented proof of it.
They really said you guys aren't ready for that.
Well, they said they weren't ready then, right? So they came out in the news, and within the first week, they had said, like, people were like, what was it? What was it? And they came out and said it was a saucer.
So, like, I don't know what's more scary, thinking that the government's hiding it from you or it being real. Like, what's
scarier? Or knowing that it's real and well, I see what you're saying. Yeah, right.
Yeah, like, what's scarier? It's like, as a conspiracy theory or as a confirmed theory, like, or as a confirmed thing? Like, I think they're both scary, but also, like, don't tell me it's real. I just want to speculate.
Right. So,
I think that, I think, I don't, aliens in general scare me. Like, all the alien movies, like Dark Skies, absolutely not. Hate that movie. It's a great movie.
Well, this is going to be...
Oh my gosh, sorry. I'm so what'd sorry that just hurt your ear. I just smacked my mic with my
nothing hand. Like going way past ASMR.
ASMR extreme.
Okay, well, we're getting off topic here, so we gotta keep going. Okay,
go ahead.
All right, so they said that there's a flying saucer, and then they retracted their statement not even a week later, and they just said it was a weather balloon.
Yeah, yeah, I remember hearing about that, the weather balloon.
Right, and so that's what it's been talked about all of these years. But people nearby during this time gave descriptions and had picture proof that they were secret military balloons, and they're called Project Mogul.
Mogul?
Yeah, which I didn't look at Project Mogul, which I feel like I should have.
Yeah, it'll be for another time.
I guess so. Maybe we'll go into more detail since we're doing two this week. Maybe I'll talk more about it on Friday.
Yeah, we can part one this, and we'll part two it for Friday.
Yeah, so anyways, so with this, it gets crazy. So the government's come out, they've said, like, well, we don't see anything, it's whatever. And then the same week, the newspapers had come out, and they had said that the saucer was found by the Royal Australian Air Force.
Okay, how? It was found here.
Yeah, that's what I thought, too. Unless they were, like, maybe chasing them through the Pacific.
No, right. Don't say that, because that makes it sound more real, like a UFO for real.
Okay, but this is where it gets weird, okay?
Chasing them.
Well, I'm just saying, you could be chasing through territories.
Picture chasing a UFO. No, don't picture that. That's terrifying.
Well, it's gonna get better. I think you're going to be like, wait, what?
Aliens are a trigger for me, but go ahead.
Are they really?
I'm terrified. Like, have you ever watched the movie E.T.? Nightmares till my adult
life. Oh, yeah, that's true. I forgot you hate E.T.
Don't even...
Well, maybe this will make you feel better.
Yeah, go for it. Keep going.
Okay. So, lots of people at the time had talked about that, but because of the time frame, you have to keep in mind, and I know you're not good with time frames...
Not at all.
...that UFOs, or saucers, or little green Martians, alien men, were never talked about back then, because nobody had ever heard of aliens, right?
Okay, so how'd it get started?
Well, then it was 30 years later that someone had published a book talking about the subject of people coming from outer space. And this is where aliens came from. So there was no evidence of little men. There was no evidence of anything from outer space. And like I said before, there were literally people that were on scene that had described exactly what it looked like. Why do you keep hitting your mic? Are you trying to blow this up?
No, I don't know.
You're confusing everybody. She's trying to just make it look like the true crime's better than the conspiracy theories.
Sorry about it.
I don't even know what that noise was. Okay, anyways. I might as well just restart the whole conspiracy theory so people can follow. Rude. Anyways. So. You made me lose my train of thought now.
It was a man-made thought.
Yes, aliens are a man-made thought. There is no proof of them. Other than the government has now told us, what, 8-9 decades later now, that aliens are real. But they did end up finding out that it wasn't just a saucer, that it was a cover-up, in which I will bring into the part two of a Cold War era spying program that was going on.
Okay, so that makes me feel a lot better.
Really makes you wonder, like, what's going on?
Yeah, considering they just came out and said that aliens are real.
So are aliens actually real, or are they made up to make us think that they're real?
I think that they're made up to make us think that they're real, so that when they came out and said that they're real, now there's a conspiracy that they're not real. Because whatever they say is not real, right?
I mean, that's true. In the world
of conspiracies.
It just seems interesting that if they knew about aliens and they are real, why they showed up that long ago, or why they come here and don't stick around. Because it seems like they're definitely far superior than we are. I mean, they literally show up, come to our planet, and then just leave.
Oh, well, I mean, I can counteract that if you'd like.
Okay.
Imagine that you and all your friends are, like, super sophisticated and educated, and you go to a middle school. Would you want to hang out, or would you just want to look for a quick second and be like, yeah, this is not my scene?
But you'd think they would have taken over by now, right?
Would you take over a middle school?
For power, maybe. You're on a whole nother planet. They could be the rulers.
Maybe.
I don't know. I guess we'll find out maybe in 2023 to add to a string of bad years.
Oh my gosh.
And at that point, I freaked you out again.
I know, seriously. I don't like aliens. Freak me out. So the conspiracy theory is that aliens are man-made.
Quite possibly in the cover-up at Roswell for a Cold War spying program that we're going to talk about on Friday.
All right. Well, I mean, I guess stay tuned for part two of Curtis's conspiracy theory. Sorry your episode's late.
Yeah, sorry, Ashley can't be punctual.
I'd say it's not going to happen again, but I'm tired of lying, so.
Oh my god. This is the most truth I think I've heard our whole marriage.
Oh my gosh, okay, that's enough of that. So, anyways, if you would like to send us an email, you can email us at partnersincrimethepodcast@gmail.com. You can follow our Instagram page where we're going to post photos of the box that Colleen was in. We'll post photos of the little green men that Curtis is talking about. And we'll post pictures of...
We're not going to post pictures of the little green men.
Okay, fine.
What we are going to post pictures of is Project Mogul of the balloons that they were using.
Okay, that's what we're going to post pictures of. But you can find that Instagram at Partners in Crime, the podcast. And that's all I got for tonight. You got anything to add? Any final words?
Yeah, all the time Ashley asks for you guys to like email us, you know, with ideas or whatever. And if you just like to email her and let her know how annoyed you are about her background ASMR, just feel free to do so.
I'm sorry.
Smacking the mic, everything else. Wow.
I know. No, I'm not. I'm amateur. Don't even. Oh, here we go. Get smacky. The computer. I'm sorry. Anyways, that's all. It's late. It's midnight.
It is time for bed.
And we are going to bed. So,
good night, everybody.
See you later. Goodbye.